This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 48, where we have an interview with Tenderfoot Training, and they answer two bulletin board questions, one on playing and interacting with your dogs without training, and dominant behavior versus aggressive behavior in dogs. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 48th Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we're doing something a little bit different. Up until now, every podcast we've done has been either me presenting a topic, or it's been an interview with a vet, Dr. Lee, or some trainers, Tenderfoot Training. Well, today we have another interview with Tenderfoot Training, but instead of presenting a topic, we decided to open it up to our bulletin board members. Our bulletin board on pets.ca is very active, and we have a lot of members, and we thought this time it might just be nice to answer their questions directly. So we put up a thread asking for suggestions, and we got a bunch of suggestions. Some we recorded before, but there were a couple that both Tenderfoot Training, Doug and Elizabeth Simpson, and myself thought were really interesting, and we're going to cover two questions in particular. One question is going to be playing and interacting with your dog without training. And that question was posed by Elise Perfect. And then we're also going to cover a question posted by Ben Max, where she wanted to know the differences between dominant behavior versus aggressive behavior. And Doug answers one question and Elizabeth answers another question. And they give us more than we bargained for in this really good interview. Because the interview is 40 minutes long, I'm not going to waste too much time introducing anything else. Let's just get right into it now. And so I'd like to welcome back a couple of special guests today. Today we have Elizabeth and Doug Simpson of Tenderfoot Training, and they're going to answer a couple of questions that our bulletin board members posed. We wanted to poll our bulletin board members to know if they had any specific questions, and Elizabeth and Doug are going to answer a couple of them. And if we don't get to all of them this time, hopefully we'll get to them the next time. But before we start, welcome Elizabeth. Glad to have you back.
Thanks so much for having us back.
It's always a pleasure. So let's just get right into it now. And we're going to start with a question that Elise Perfect posed. And we'll put the actual thread in the show notes so people can follow along. But it was post number 7 in the thread we're talking about. And she wanted to know, another idea would be to ask them, Doug and Elizabeth, about how they play with their dogs. What are some good ways to spend time interacting with your dog that isn't directly training? So I know you guys are going to have a lot to say about this. So why don't you go ahead?
Okay. So really, it's hard to escape training, to be honest with you, because the whole reason to play with your dog is to engage them. And engagement's what everything, every relationship is about. So, yeah, there's going to be training involved, but you don't have to necessarily be wholly conscious about it or have a mission at the end of your playing. So there's all kinds of things you can do. Of course, there's the standard playing Frisbee. But how do you play Frisbee? How do you get your dog to actually catch it in the air? Well, you got to teach him. So, yeah, there's some training involved. And what you do with a Frisbee is you start by rolling it on its edge along a flat ground so that they can follow it more easily and then grab it. And so that starts them getting the idea of them having to put their mouth on it and catch it. And then as they get good at it, you can roll it, you know, a little faster or go a little higher suddenly, and then soon you'll find your dog is able to be the ultimate Frisbee dog. You're going to do the same thing with balls. Chuckets are those wonderful sticks that you can buy at the store that enable those of us that are throwing impaired like myself, you can throw farther and faster. And I can throw with a chucket all day long. Throwing by my own arm, I'm not so successful. And you have to touch the gross ball when they've put their mouth on it 16 times. So the chucket allows you to stay clean as well, which is really cool. So those are all kind of fetch games. So, yeah, they're learning. Some of the things that people like to do is if you have water nearby, you can play water games where, again, you're throwing things in the water. They have to swim out to go get it, and they bring it back to you. Swimming with your dog is great fun. They now have places here in Colorado where you can, during the winter when you can't get into a pond, where you can actually take your dogs to swimming pools and work them there and teach them how to jump off of docks and go after things. So that can be fun. We wrote an article recently on taking your dog to a children's playground. So not everybody has the ability to set up their own agility course or do agility training per se, but you can go to a children's playground and teach them to climb up the stairs, go down the slide, go through one of the tunnels. Here we even have some gorgeous playgrounds where they have sort of synthetic rocks to climb over. And so you can teach them to go up and over and around and through. And again, there's learning, but it's fun. Find-it games are great, where you hide their toys and teach them to find their toys. At first, you have to help them a lot and encourage them and kind of participate. But then you can hide bones or toys all over the house and specifically say, where's elephant? Where'd the elephant go? And make them look for elephant. All dogs are hunting dogs. So they're all, you know, have that natural instinct to go find something. So teach them to do that. You can teach them tracking games where you take something like a leather glove with and rub it on your body so it really smells like you. Have somebody, you know, keeping your dog back. You're going to run through a park, through your backyard, through the woods, dragging that item behind you, and help teach your dog to track and find you, maybe hiding behind a rock or behind a tree. Do I need to take a breath yet?
No, please go. You're just giving us loads and loads of advice and variability in our game, so please continue.
Okay. So some people don't like the idea of playing tug of war with their dogs because they believe it becomes sort of a dominant struggle. But if you've taught your dog properly how to drop and take it, how to, you know, take the rope, then drop it when you say so, there's no harm in having a tug of war. Dogs do it with each other all the time. So then also setting up play dates for your dogs, just like you would with your children, where you know some people in your neighborhood that have nice, friendly dogs that maybe they want to bring their dogs over to play, or you take your dog over there for a play date. It's just something to entertain your dog. We also don't find a problem with wrestling, chasing your dog, dodging and juking and playing a game just like you observe dogs playing. You want to think, act, and play like a dog. And so that's okay, just so long as you keep the energy level at a manageable level. So wrestling with your dog, chasing him around, doing things like that are fine, just so long as it doesn't get out of control. It needs to be at a level where you can always manage it. And don't allow them to be grabbing your arm or doing anything inappropriate or grabbing your clothes. But you can, sometimes to encourage a dog to play, you can reach forward and grab their front leg and go, come on, let's play, come on, let's play. And you teach them how to get energized and play and be light. But then when you say so, you say enough or easy or gentle. And you teach them to calm down. And then you, 5 seconds, 10 seconds later, you can go, oh, let's play again, and you get them going. So teach them how to play and how to get easy, how to play and how to get easy, which is very handy in their interactions with the rest of the world. If they were approaching a bunny rabbit, you'd say, easy. Well, they've already learned that from when you were playing with them. Or if they're meeting a new dog for the first time and you want them to have a positive interaction, you can go, oh, let's play, and then encourage them to play with that other dog. But they learned that from your playing with them. So it's all learning. We can't escape learning. Sorry.
If I can interrupt you for a second, Elizabeth. So quick question. If it's too difficult for you to get this dog to stop, to calm down, then you need to go back to the basics, right? You need to go back to training. If your dog gets so excited that the dog can never calm down, what do you do then? The answer is going to be you need more training because the dog has to listen to you. When you say stop, the dog needs to stop. And if you're not able to do it on your own, that's where you should seek the advice of a trainer?
Yes, but also you can do a lot on your own. Having them on the leash in some of these circumstances gives you that emergency brake, gives you that ultimate control. So, for instance, for the play and get easy game, you want to think about things on a scale of 1 to 10. So I don't want to take him to a level 10 where it's going to be really hard for him to come back down to a 2. I'm only going to take him up to a 4 at first and then bring him down to a 2 and then take him up to a 6 and bring him down to a 2. So together we're learning how to do this, but the leash always gives you that ultimate emergency brake and control in case he starts getting wigged out like, woohoo, we're playing, and he can't stop himself. And you can stop him with a leash, then get calm, go to a loose leash, and then just calmly, slowly, gently pet him and move slowly, breathe slowly, change your energy because dogs match our energy. So when you're playful, they're playful. When you calm down, they should calm down. It might take them a second or two to pick up on it, but it shouldn't be that tough. But absolutely, if any of this does not go well, you need to think about, well, what's my foundation with my dog like? I need to go back to foundation.
Right. And if we could just back up just for 5 minutes, just because I know someone may ask this. When we were talking about the tug of war with the rope,
uh-huh.
We're talking more for adult dogs, is there a risk that, you know, if we do this with puppies, that we're going to pull out some of their teeth or something? Or is there a guideline with regard to age and tug of war?
Well, obviously, adult dogs are going to be stronger all around. They're going to have stronger muscles and stronger mouths. So, yeah, you can be a little more vigorous with them. But if you watch a puppy, you can play gently and do a tug of war. And you know, they, just so you know, they're going to lose their teeth between 4 months and 6 months. So if one's loose and somebody played tug of war with the puppy and the tooth pops out, it's not necessarily because you were too rough. It's just that tooth was ready to come out. So don't be freaking out and getting upset with yourself. Just be appropriate with your energy and don't be whipping them around.
Right.
Yeah, but you've probably seen some of the videos on YouTube where maybe, and there tends to be a lot of Jack Russells or a lot of really heavily muscled dogs.
And then they lift them off the ground. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they love to grab on and totally lift them off the ground and swing them around. You know, be very, very careful with that. Not all dogs can do that, but that's how intense it can get.
So it goes to show you that their teeth are pretty strong. Like, I guess what I'm wondering, is there a risk of injuring our pet's teeth by playing tug of war? I've heard certain people say, yes, it is a risk. I guess I'm just wondering what your opinion is on that.
Well, you don't want to be like whipping them back and forth.
Right.
Okay? Because, yeah, you're going to pull a neck muscle, possibly put a vertebra at a joint and you know, maybe hurt a tooth. But again, gentle play. If you watch dogs playing together and playing tug of war with maybe a dish towel or something, they do it with almost this calculated roughness sometimes. Their intention is not to hurt the other dog or even to get the dish towel away. Their intention is to continue play. They love that. And some of the things that we've witnessed with our dogs have been so beautiful where an adult golden retriever, a pretty powerful dog, will just stand there with a rope or a dish towel hanging from his mouth and allow this little minuscule 4-pound, you know, Pomeranian puppy to just pull and tug and attack that towel while the golden retriever just stands there and gently holds it for him.
Right.
And it's so beautiful, but they're very tuned into each other and what the other one can handle. Very rarely in a game of tug of war, per se, do you see a dog being injured by another dog. It's when people get too crazy that we do damage.
So it's common sense, you know.
Always common sense.
You want to pull with the same force as a dog would pull and not the same force as a lumberjack would pull, kind of thing.
There you go. Yeah. You're not playing with an elephant or a horse. You're playing with the dog. So back to the kind of the wrestling and stuff like that, getting down on the ground with your dog and kind of being a dog, you know, play with a dog like a dog would play and just be gentle, but you can wrestle around and make it fun. You don't want to intimidate them or scare them or you know, be inappropriate, but they really enjoy that. And it can really bring out a beautiful side of a dog, especially that's maybe a little timid or a little shy and doesn't quite know how to play. Maybe it becomes our obligation to teach him how to play, which can be done in a wonderfully gentle kind of way.
Excellent.
So I have a couple more.
Yeah, please, please.
Over to Doug. So one thing that we talk about a lot is dogs tend to be in recess too much of the time. They're just doing their own thing all the time because we human beings are just too busy, you know, dealing with life. And so some of the simple things that we can do are, instead of just putting their food in a bowl and they inhale it in about 2 seconds, well, that was pretty fast and pretty boring. But a way to play with their food is to take some of it and take a handful and throw it across the floor or across the backyard and let them go actually hunt for every little piece. They eat more slowly, and it engages their mind a little bit more. And they even have balls that you can buy that you can put their meal into, and as they roll the ball around, a little kibble falls out here, a little kibble falls out there. And so that keeps them entertained as well. They even have games that you can buy now. A client told me about a game that she bought for her dog that it blows out liver-flavored bubbles. And so when she's busy on the phone at work, because she works out of her home, she just sets up the bubble blower downstairs, and the dog for 20 minutes is just jumping up and grabbing liver-flavored bubbles.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
It's not as interactive, you know, with you, so it's not creating relationship, but it's still, sometimes we're just trying to think of things to do to entertain our dogs because we sort of seem to run out of ideas at times.
In order to avoid emails that are going to come my way, do you recall the name of the bubble-making machine?
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to contact her. I have to call her anyway, and so I'll call her and get that for you, and we can put it up on the website.
Yeah, cool. I'll put it in the show notes. Thanks.
Okay. And then also another thing, this is something that we use for training, but you could potentially also use it to entertain a dog, especially a dog that's more sight-oriented, a sight hound of some kind, where you take either a horse lunge line or some kind of fishing pole, and it's going to be a long pole with a long string on the end, and you can tie a little stuffed animal to it. And if you're not big on running, you can at least send that out and then kind of have your dog chase it like a cat chases, you know, a little fluffy feather. And that can give them exercise and then, you know, really engage them and stimulate them. The only downside to that is you don't want to be teaching them to chase small animals. So you want to create a lot of structure and control around that game. But it can still be a really fun game, but it doesn't mean that they then get to chase every, you know, squirrel on the street.
A good one, yeah. Makes absolute good sense, yeah.
So those are just top of the, you know, off the top of our heads, lots of things that you can do. We're actually sometimes surprised when a client will say, well, you know, how do I play with my dog? And to us, I guess it seems to come second nature. But, you know, there's a lot of ideas out there. And just touching your dog is, you know, and massaging and doing things like that, they appreciate that too. It doesn't always have to be intense play. They just like being with you.
Cool. So thanks so much for that, Elizabeth. I certainly hope Ellie's Perfect now has some good ideas on how to play with her dog, and likely you've definitely taught other people some new games with their dogs as well, so thanks so much.
Not at all. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's always tons and tons more that you can do with your dog, but we want to get to that next question too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so was Doug going to answer that one, or were you going to answer
that
one?
Doug's going to answer that one.
Okay. So thanks so much for this, Elizabeth. We'll be speaking to you in the near future, and we'll wait for Doug to get on the line.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Hello there.
Hey, Doug. Nice to hear your voice again. It's been a while since we've spoken.
You're a lucky man sometimes.
I am indeed. So actually, we're going to get Doug to answer the next question. And this one was by Bulletin Board member Ben Max. And she had a question about aggression. Why don't we let you read that question, Doug?
All right. Starts out with, I think a lot of people have problems with dogs that exhibit aggressive behavior with other dogs while on or off leash. Perhaps they can address the difference between dominant behavior or aggressive behavior and how to address both. Maybe even throw in possession aggression. There seems many topics in regard to this, and I think we can all learn the difference with all and how to correct, teach, train, and of course differentiate between these behaviors.
Well, I think she's posed this question to the perfect people, because this is something that I know you guys are dealing with all the time. So what comes to mind straight off the bat when you hear a question like that?
Relationship. First thing that pops into mind, because I believe most every single problem comes down to the true relationship between the people, which is love, trust, and respect. A lot of aggressions are out of an insecure or fearful animal. So if the dog actually trusts in what the human decides and asks the dog to do, then the dog should be calm and well-mannered.
How do we get there?
With us, we it's all the big picture. It's who you are with your dog, like all the time. It's not a relationship. All relationships are not done in 10-minute sessions. So we do our first three drills, which are our foundation drills, and actually everything comes through drills. So trust needs to be sometime developed for over a period of time, or it needs to have situations where your dog might be a little nervous, but yet you handled the situation, everything went smoothly, so they get confidence. So relationship, love, trust, and respect, a balance of those three. It's also part of loving your dog and not creating like pain in training or something, because when you create pain in any relationship, you lose trust. So respect is being the leader, and making decisions is all you have to do to be a leader. So big vocabulary, a lot to talk about. You become a leader, the dog starts to trust and respect in what you have to say.
And I know that Ben Max is also coming from a rescue perspective. I know that she helps rescue. So a lot of times dogs that she's involved with, they're not necessarily her dogs. And sometimes they come from problem places, shall we say. So I know she's also asking that question with that in the back of her head as well.
Okay.
Any special tips or guidelines with regard to that particular situation? Or is it, again, just starting from scratch and building a relationship?
Well, a lot of people think, and this can be true for some dogs, but a lot of people think this takes months to get the dog to trust or to get rid of some bad habits. And that can be for a few dogs, but typically we found that a dog changes pretty much almost immediately when the person changes. So we take dogs that are dog aggressive or people aggressive, and usually it could be a lack of socialization for the dog, especially during their optimal times when they were just a puppy learning to be social. It could be another dog might have attacked that dog one time even, and so now the dog is leery of other dogs and they're trying to growl and bark or lunge and say, get away from me, you're making me nervous. There's many, many things. Also, the person gets a dog and puts them in that state of recess where they're just free to do whatever they want outside or inside most 90% of their day. And that creates an insecure dog because they don't truly have a leader around. The human just becomes a buddy that hangs with them. So it goes back to the engagement part. So when someone gets a dog like that, I say hook them up with the leash for a while. And, you know, through the week, different times a lot, and start to spend time with the dog. So the dog starts to get comfortable with you and you can start to make decisions and do sits and stays and downs and out of the kitchen and all the different drills that we do and how to be on a leash. So when I approach another dog, if I'm 15 yards away and here comes this other dog, as soon as the person sees their dog start to get a little attuned to that other dog, as soon as their head lowers or their eyes or a low growl or lip goes up, as soon as they see any little thought of that dog starting to get anxious, they should immediately start to do our healing drills to get the dog's attention. Because if they just keep walking closer and closer to that dog, it's not going to be better. It's going to be worse the closer you get. Because distance, we've talked about, is a form of pressure. Someone getting closer to me, if they were mad at me, gets more and more intense. So immediately, as soon as this dog starts to get a little, the thought of kind of focusing on that dog, I'll either turn into him and take five steps in the opposite direction and head back again. I'll add more stops. I'll add more pace changes. Or I'll add that yo-yo game that we do where we simply say no and we backpedal five steps, pulling the dog back, and then we do more stops. So there's some things, if you do that for like 30 seconds in just a little area, it gets the dog paying attention to the human. And then they can usually approach closer to that dog. Now, things that happen in repetition over and over and over desensitize us. So what I would do is before I just have somebody walk by with the dog one time and then they pass us and they keep going, if the dog gets excited or barks or lunges, that person just stopped at failure, and that's what the dog learned. So we have to set it up where we have someone just stand there with their dog and we're going to practice approaching them over and over about 10 times. And then we have to stand with our dog and have somebody walk by over and over and turn around and walk by again about 10 times because the dog challenges usually the first 3 to 5 times. And then you can get to success. So you have to be patient and correct the first few times and then everything will smooth out. And you'll have success. So as I'm approaching somebody, also, if I walk directly towards you, if I were mad at you, which I would never be, Marco.
Thank you.
If I walk directly towards you, that's the most pressure I could put on you. But if I pick the spot off to the side of you and walk to that spot like 5 or 10 feet away from you, there's less pressure on you. So to set this up, I would have someone stand there with the dog. I would have this dog, aggressive dog, with me, and I would pick a point to the side, and I would start to walk, and if the dog got a little excited, I would turn into him, I would yo-yo, I would do stops, I would do pace changes, get their attention on me, until I could walk right by that other dog. And then I would maybe do like a box around that other dog or circle it or walk right by. And I'm also going to start to work this dog I'm with and do sits and stays, getting closer and closer to that other dog with my body between the two dogs for a little bit of protection and also a little bit of security for the dog that's fearful. So I would walk by getting closer and closer. My body would be between the dogs. And then I would do the exact same thing with the dog going dog to dog. So my body will be on the outside of those two dogs with distance between them. And then after one pass, I get a little closer on the second pass and a little closer, still doing sits and stays and doing some things to work the dog until I can put that dog right next to that other dog. And also saying, even if they look at that dog, leave them alone. So they need to maybe not, they're going to be the dog that's going to play with other dogs, but they do have to tolerate and have good manners.
It's an important point. You know, a lot of times we want to solve these problems, you know, in theory, but, and, you know, just to hear you talk, you know, like the fog lifts, it makes so much sense. You know, if your dog is afraid of other dogs or your dog is people aggressive, at the end of the day, they're going to still have to meet other dogs and other people if we want them not to be people and dog aggressive. So it's just, how do you do that safely and effectively? And I mean, I do believe you just gave us some really good, tangible ways to do that.
Just to hit that highlight one more time, it's creating your problems in a safe or structured or controlled way just by having a leash on and doing it with a number of dogs so that you can create the success part. So when we're surprised with someone running up or whatever, then we already have had these situations and the dog should know how to respond.
Right. You know, you're giving us good suggestions by having both dogs on a leash, putting your body in between the two. I mean, that's just, it's good common sense, but it's also safety. You don't, even if you think your dog is totally trustworthy, have both of them on a leash, no?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the nice thing is that one thing is to what we're going to do is you would take this dog with the aggressive problem or fear problem, and I would practice approaching this dog, another dog that's just standing there with their person, a number of times, and then the next step is to reverse that, where I'm going to take this dog with me and ask him to sit and stay and have that other person now walk beside us back and forth and approach us and circle us, and maybe a bicycle or a skateboard. So I need to teach all the things that we meet on a trail. The next step is to have this dog that's with me that has a little bit of the issues, and I'm going to put it right behind another dog that's walking in front of me with their human. So we're going to get used to having a dog in front of us while we walk. A little harder scenario is to have both people then turn and go the opposite direction. So now the problem dog with me is in front and that other dog is right on their rear end. Most dogs don't like that. It makes them comfortable because that other dog's teeth are right on their rear end.
Right.
So maybe that dog's going to follow us 3 feet away or 5 yards away, depends on how bad my dog is. And then they're going to get a little closer and walk right behind me until they can be 6 inches off this other dog's rear end. And this dog is just walking, ignoring that. So then we might turn again and then switch where the other dog's following. And we do that a few times. And then we need to walk together. So the human body, at least one human body, should be between the dogs, and we're going to walk side by side together, doing our healing drills, stay in my little sweet spot beside me. And after just 2 or 3 minutes, I might go now dog to dog in the middle with a little bit of distance. And if that dog even just looks over there, they get a little kind of stop on the leash and go, hey, leave him alone, and then we keep walking. Just a look over there, catch the thoughts early. And usually within 2 minutes, I can squeeze that dog in till they're walking shoulder to shoulder, ignoring each other.
Because you've taught them in that short space that you're the leader, everything's cool, there's no danger.
Exactly. And it's not that they have to put their nose up on the other dog to smell them. With their noses, they're smelling that dog while we've been passing them from the get-go. They've been smelling the dog when they pass us and when we walk behind and in front. So now, actually, And within 10 minutes, I've desensitized them. Things happen in repetition to that other dog. They didn't get hurt or, you know, no pressure was put on them, and they know that I'm the one that's in the control that's calling the harmony of the pack.
Right.
So they can relax. And then everything goes smoothly. And you can usually go through these steps in just like a heartbeat in 10, 15 minutes.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just want to add one important thing. I mean, this is, at least for me, this is kind of like a level two problem. I would, and I think you're on the same page, and please tell me if you're not when I'm finished, but you have to be able to control the dog first. If you can't control the dog, you can't put the dog next to another dog or next to another person and expect there to be success. I would suspect that there are small baby steps, like we said at the beginning, there's laying the foundation, and there's some foundation that comes before doing this drill. I mean, the dog should listen to you, unleash, not pull, etc., or else you haven't built the proper foundation. Is that about right? Do you have anything
You're so on, okay. Marco. What we said earlier was, you said, what's the first thing you do? And I said, relationship, which means how well does this dog do 30 things for me? Or at least 20, means how well do they listen to me.
Right, because if they're not listening to you when you call their name, forget about teaching them to be non-aggressive with other dogs.
Sure.
Right, they haven't accepted you as the leader yet.
And that's most people's problem, is they're so focused on just the problem. I just want this problem to change, and all they work on is the problem. And what I try to teach people is work on your relationship, and then you don't have problems because they actually do what you ask them to do. And that has four levels. Inside your house, that's level one. Outside world, level two. Distance away from you, level three. And then add distractions, level four. So how well do they do 30 things at each of those four levels simply means how well do they listen to me. If your dog listens to you, you don't have problems because they do whatever you ask them to do.
Right. So again, unfortunately, I guess from Ben Max's perspective, if it's a dog that she's just taken in or she's fostering, or we have a lot of people on the site that foster, they'll foster a strange dog. Same rule has to apply. They still have to build that initial relationship before they're going to get that dog away from dog aggression or people aggression, which is their ultimate goal. But it ain't going to happen if they don't listen to you at first, be it a strange
right.
dog or a familiar dog or a foster dog or any dog.
Right. And people are... We surprise people all the time because, again, they think this takes a long period of time. But, you know, I don't know these dogs that I deal with, and within the first 20 minutes, I've already changed everything. So just because of, you know, they're smelling your confidence and or your insecurities or your nervousness. So they know all these things about you, and very nice story. Just yesterday, I had dealt with a client that actually his dog has attacked him four different times in 50 states. Stitches in the face, the last attack. He still didn't want to get rid of the dog, so we've been working together, and he's both doing very, very well. Dog also has dog aggression problems and all kinds of things and chasing things. So he's out in the backyard going to go play frisbee with the dog, and a bunch of elk come through his place just right off the thing, and usually the dog chases and does things. So he happened to have a long leash on and because he was working the dog, and so he did a leave it drill and a stay close, and he started playing frisbee, and then he took the leash off, and my wife goes, "You took the leash off. Didn't you think your dog would chase after him?" And he said, "I just expected he was going to be there with me." And to me, that's like another level that I try to get people on, is it's your expectation or your inner confidence of just expecting your dog to do the right thing. So I told him, I said, "You know, you just hit another level, because that's really what it's all about. If he would have been out there being nervous and seeing the bad happening, that would have happened."
Because the dog would have felt it.
Right, and the dog, he took the leash off, the dog just stayed there, played frisbee, the elk got closer and closer and never even paid him any attention. So it all just changed because it's that other level, and there's many levels that people go through, and you can just see him hit that level. He goes, "I just expected him not to go this time," and they didn't.
And from the perspective of the dog, I mean, we're guessing here, but the dog seems happy too when the dog knows who the leader is. You know, if you expect the dog to listen, the dog might well feel that the dog is supposed to listen, you know, after you've done some initial training.
Right. And see, the great thing is people try to teach, you know, all kinds of things like watch me, look at me, which is good because it's a word of association. But to me, when that dog has any decisions, squirrel, bird, anything, another dog, instead of reacting, which is the right side of their brain, they should look to the leader for direction every single time. Just like a child should not spend the night at someone's house, I always say they should ask permission first. So that's the decision maker, that's the leader. So when they have a decision, I see that dog, instead of reacting and getting wound up, they should first look to the leader and go, hey, things cool? And you go, yeah. So it takes the pressure off of them too. And just the simple things like, you know, having an actual good leave it drill or a stay. If your dog will stay or leave something alone, it doesn't matter what walks by him or little kid hugs him, they should stay in that spot.
Right.
Those are really good basic foundation drills that, you know, if my dog leaves things alone, they're not going to go after stuff.
Just to backtrack for 20 seconds, I mean, and you can also correct me if you feel I'm wrong, but before dogs were domesticated, there's a pack with one leader. The dog that's not the leader is not going to do anything. He's going to look to the leader, as we just suggested. You know, before the dog goes to chase an animal within the pack, he's not going to do it on its own without looking at the leader first. Is that correct in pack mentality?
It is to a big point where they don't do a lot of things like that without kind of permission from the leader, but yet they scrap sometimes within themselves establishing their hierarchy. Some benevolent leaders will step in and say, knock it off. Some won't. So it kind of depends on the leader, too, on their dogginality. We get puppies, for example, sometimes, and a member of the pack, a middle member, will go after the pup to kind of put it in its place, and most of our leaders have stepped in between them and said, back off. Knock it off. It's a pup. Leave him alone. And they create harmony of the pack, too, which I do as well. So that's what a leader does. But yet, some dogs will, you know, a leader doesn't necessarily go first all the time. They eat first, and they do a lot of things, but it's not like an all-or-none theory sometimes.
Good to know. Thanks for all that great info, Doug. Let's just go back to the original question for a sec. Can you talk about dominant behavior and aggressive behavior just a bit more?
Sure. The dominant behavior is a dog that simply kind of holds their ground. They don't back down necessarily. They're not really looking for a fight, but yet they don't really want to submit. So it's kind of a confident dog that, you know, might just stand there, may not avert their eyes away to be submissive or, you know, give submissive body language with the ears or the, you know, different things. But an aggressive dog, most aggressions, like probably 95%, are out of insecure or fearful dogs. So those types of dogs need confidence, and a confident leader has a confident pack. So their behaviors there are more to, you know, kind of show a dog as, remember, distance is a form of pressure. So as another dog might approach, they might lower their head, they might, you know, have a low growl, the lip might go up, the tail's going to change, the eyes might get what some people call a whale eye, or it might just change to intensity. So they're going to kind of change, kind of warning that dog to back away from them. But at the same time, confident leader, confident pack. So if the leader, hopefully the human, steps up and goes, leave them alone or stay, then that's what they should do. They should pay attention to you. And the more things the dog does through understanding, the more confidence they get. So the more vocabulary I can have with the dog, the more confident that animal will be through understanding what I'm talking about. And every time I make a decision, serotonin gets released in their brain that naturally makes them calmer, more submissive, and more cooperative. If I say sit and the dog doesn't sit, then they're getting adrenaline rushes that makes them a little more obstinate and challenging. So following through and having your dog do things automatically makes you a leader, and it automatically calms your dog down. That's why it's another reason to have a big vocabulary.
Right, and I would suspect as environments change, some people travel with their dog, bring their dogs to different places, sometimes for the first time. The more they know, the more vocabulary you could pull out of your quiver and give to your dog, the more you can likely pacify your dog and calm your dog down and let your dog feel that, you know, it's cool. There's nothing to be afraid of in this situation. You've given them the word that they already know for calmness and everything's good.
Right, because most leaders get to a situation where the dog lunges or barks or they have a fear, and most people coo at them by going, it's okay, baby, it's okay. And to me, just through tone, they're rewarding their dog, just like going, you're so great, it's okay. You're actually rewarding your dog, and you're also being an insecure leader, making something a big deal that's not.
Right.
Confident leader, confident pack, so don't make things a big deal. Instead of going, oh, here comes the dog, it's more like, hey, cool dog, look at the colors on that one. Just have a confident attitude. It's how you present things.
In that particular case, some people, instead of going, oh, that's okay, they might go, no, is that too much?
It's a little bit questioning. People like to make everything a question by close or no. A lot of things should be, not everything, but most things should be a little short and sharp, like close or no. I tell some people to put a P, like nope, with a P there, so there's an ending on that. Because no ends in a no, and we want to carry it out all the time. No, and you don't want things to be that sing-songy stuff, usually.
Very good tip. I know most people, myself included, usually use the no in that to no. But you're right. It makes more sense. A sharp, direct no.
Right. Startle sounds. Just think of a startle sound. Startle sounds disrupt things. They get our attention. They get your dog's attention. They stop whining and barking. So short, sharp noises get our attention more than a long, elongated carrying out that sound.
Excellent information as always.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for that great information, Doug, and please thank Elizabeth again as well. I think we're over the 40-minute mark, so we'll end here, but I know this is very informative to the people posing the question and very informative to other people listening that have the exact same problem, and you know that because you see this problem all the time. So thanks as always for doing this, Doug, and we hope to speak with you again. Actually, we know we'll speak with you again with more questions from our members in the near future.
Thanks, Marco. You have a great day. It was good carrying on a conversation again with you.
Thanks again, Doug. And I'd like to thank Doug and Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training one last time. You can find their website at tenderfoottraining.com. As our many regular listeners already know, they have a really good DVD that they sell off their site. It has nothing to do with our site. I just recommend it because it's a great product. They have both a VHS copy and a DVD copy of their training. The VHS copy goes for, I think, $40, and the DVD is $60, but it's absolutely well worth it, as you can tell from their over 30 years of experience. They haven't just started this yesterday, and they definitely have a method that works. Link, of course, to go in the show notes. I'm also going to put a few more links into the show notes with regard to some of the toys that Elizabeth suggested that are great fun for dogs. If you like this podcast and you want to get it automatically, the best way to do so is to subscribe for free. Just go to the front page of our blog, www.pets.ca/blog, and just click any of the subscribe buttons. You can subscribe in iTunes, you can subscribe in Google Reader, and if you don't know how to subscribe at all or you're having trouble, you can email us directly, pets.ca@gmail.com. We do realize that we had a little bit of trouble with our iTunes feed. We're working on that now. It should be fixed within a day or two, but everything is available directly from the blog, so there's nothing lost on the blog, so just go there if you're looking for particular episodes. Our next podcast is going to be an interview with Dr. Lee, and for this interview as well, we asked our bulletin board members what topics they were interested in, and Dr. Lee and I chose one. It's already been recorded, and it should be released, hopefully within 1 week or so. If you're at all an animal lover, I highly recommend you join our forum for free. Just make your way to pets.ca and click the bulletin board link on any page, and you'll get right there. It's all free. We're a pretty friendly bunch. If you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you'll know that in general, we are a pro spay and neuter bulletin board. As long as everyone's friendly, everyone is welcome. So if you've been lurking for a while, please just join and participate directly. Loads of good information, loads of cute pics, loads of cute videos. It's a fun place to be. This was one of our longer podcasts, so I'm going to conclude right here. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, before we go, our pets need us so much. They love us so much. Why don't we take 2 extra minutes to love them back? Get down on your hands and knees, give them some good pets, stroke them under the chin, stroke them on the back. And just before you finished, give him one more extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now, everyone.